offered through Oklahoma Farm Bureau Mutual Insurance and affiliated companies.
We're not talking about punching a time clock and working 9 to 5. We're talking about working around the clock, rain or shine, hot or cold, because crops and animals won't wait. Jimmy knows all about it because he lives it. And Jimmy knows what you're going through because he goes through it too. He's here to talk about it. It's seed and feed, chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey, good day to all you great stewards of the land. It is Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark, brought to you by First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Sayre, Oklahoma. All right, today is Jimmy's Wildlife Wisdom Hour, and I'm going to have a representative from the Department of Wildlife on here in just a few seconds. Let's check out some temperatures first, please. 60 at Hollis, 58 at Hobart, 62 at Cheyenne. Home of the secret weapon. Hey, speaking of the secret weapon, his granddaughter, Kimberly Denny, she got MVP for the Cheyenne at the Western Equipment basketball tournament up at Arapahoe last weekend. So congratulations, Kimberly. 56 at Hooker, 57 at Slapout, 55 at the May Ranch up there on the Kansas state line, 63 at Fairview. And out here in the Texas Panhandle, it's more the same. 56 at Lipscomb, 62 at Miami, 60 at Wellington, and 60 at Odell. All right, on the phone with me right now, I think he's at the Muskogee WMA, Jeff Pennington, regional supervisor for the Central Region for the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation. Welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity. I'm at the Okmulgee
that's
Wildlife
it.
Management Area right now.
Muskogee, Okmulgee, they're all the same.
No, yeah, just kind of difficult names to pronounce sometimes. But that's where I'm sitting right now.
Yes. Well, cool. Well, thanks for joining me today. And before we get into talking about the things we're going to discuss today on today's show, who's Jeff Pennington?
Well, you know, I started working for the Wildlife Department in the fall of 1992, so I've been around a while with the department. Before that, I got my wildlife degree from Oklahoma State University, and in high school and growing up and everything, my dad coached football. We moved around a lot, so I've lived in Cushing, Bristow, Durant, Hilton, and Purcell. So graduated from high school from Purcell, so just kind of moved around and, you know, got a wife and two kids, but my kids are out of the house. My kids are 31 and 28. Got a couple of girls there. So, and I live in Sand Springs, just west of Tulsa there. I am the department's representative on feral hog issues. And, but my job at Central Region Wildlife Supervisor is to take care of wildlife issues in central part of Oklahoma. So, you know, I'm probably going to be just east of where a lot of your listeners are, but have a lot of this. We have guys out in western Oklahoma that have these same responsibilities. We just are more. I just happen to have the guy that has the hog responsibilities on here today. So anyway, hopefully I'll be able to answer questions about them.
Yeah, if anybody has any questions for Jeff, please feel free to send a message in on the text line, the Fowler Agency text line at 580-225-9697. Maybe you can answer him to his best of his ability and let him know. Well, you've been with the Wildlife Department since 1992. And what, I'm trying to figure out how to word this question. What changes in the Wildlife Department as far as hunting and fishing is concerned has happened since 1992 till now that has had a major impact, you think, on wildlife, fishing, whether it's the animals or the fishing? Does anything just stick out in your mind?
Sure. You know, the greatest change that would be applicable to most hunters, and it's not as profound in western Oklahoma as it is over here in central Oklahoma, but here in central Oklahoma, quail and deer have, it's just like you took an hourglass and you flipped it. When I was a young man living in central Oklahoma, we could still kill good numbers of quail in central Oklahoma, and that's not the case anymore. But on the other hand, I never saw deer when I was a young man over here in central Oklahoma, you know. So, and that's in the 1970s, largely in the early 80s. And we started to get some in the early 80s, probably like most folks out there in western Oklahoma. But
right now
we've got deer coming out our ears. And, you know, quail are, you know, they're like I said, out in western Oklahoma there, we've still got pockets where there's good numbers of them. But over here in central Oklahoma, we've still got some in the areas with the best habitat. But we don't have the quail, so that's no doubt that's the biggest deal. And you could say things, you know, turkeys in that same time period have, while they've suffered a little bit here recently, they're a lot stronger than what they used to be. So we kind of had a shift in our hunters. When I first started out with the wildlife department over here in central Oklahoma, there were still a lot of quail hunters, and we don't have those bird hunters anymore in the numbers that we used to. But everybody hunts deer. Deer is king now, and the feral hog is another thing it's not wildlife, but, you know, it was non-existent outside of southeast Oklahoma, and then south-central Oklahoma and the Arbuckle Mountains had some, but those things have proliferated largely because hunters moved them around the state illegally. But that's another big change on the landscape, you know. And then, you know, in terms of working for the department, we do all kinds of things different. You know, some people in the department think, oh, man, it's tough now. Well, I remember back when we didn't have good equipment. You know, we're doing prescribed burn today on Okmulgee WMA, and I remember when we had very limited equipment, and it would be a challenge to even burn off a third of the acreage that we can now because of training. And so a lot of things have gotten way better. The only thing that over here in central Oklahoma that I could see that's been a big negative is our small game, you know, our quail and rabbits just aren't what they used to be. And that's largely habitat related.
Right. That was a question I was going to ask you because, you know, the same thing basically happened out here in western Oklahoma compared to central Oklahoma. As you know, our quail population started going backwards, and a lot of that has to do with habitat. And, you know, you and I could get into hour-long conversation on, like, what have deer feeders done to attract more varmints and, you know, and stuff like that. But just to keep it on the calm side, we'll talk about, you know, there's a lot of habitat. I see in central Oklahoma myself, there's a lot more cedar trees now than they used to be. And cedar trees, in your opinion, are they good or bad for habitat?
In general, they're bad. They're a sign of an unhealthy ecosystem. And yes, a lot of times deer will bed in them and everything, but I used to make the analogy that it's kind of like my grandmother used to make the greatest chocolate chip cookies. She's no longer with us now, but you know, if I could just eat one or two chocolate chip cookies, it probably wouldn't be bad. But the thing is, with cedar trees, eventually it will take decades, but they can turn into a solid stand of cedars and get to a point to where it's very expensive to remediate and make the habitat decent. So they're something negative on the landscape. We certainly would like wish we didn't have any of them, but not something that the fires control those historically, and fire suppression makes it to where those things proliferate. And but anyway, that's kind of one of the main reasons that we do a prescribed fire. There's many reasons we do it, but one of them is cedar control.
Right, exactly. You know, I realize cedars provide protection for all kinds of animals, especially during snow and cold, you know. But outside that, that's it. You know, there's nothing there for them to do. And I think the prescribed fire you're talking about, in my opinion, is really good because, you know, the mechanical removal is great also. There's all kinds of ways to do it, but the fire gets the seed, most of the seed, because them cedar trees put out a lot of seed.
Yeah, if you do the mechanical, you're buying time. You know, you'll have to do mechanical again in a decade, where especially once you get control of them, those cedars I'm talking about here, once you get those cedars controlled either through fire or through a mechanical treatment, if you can run some, when those cedars are small, you can run a low intensity fire through there. You know, you don't have the risk of escape and stuff. So, but you can kill those 1, 2, 3, up to like 6 feet cedars relatively easy. But once they get above 6 feet, you know, it takes a real hot fire to effectively control them. So,
what
anyway, so, on our on On our wildlife areas where we have a rotational burn program, we just don't have a problem with cedar. There's some of the old ones. Most of our burning programs we've started in the last 3 or 4 decades, and you'll still see a lot of big trees, especially if your ignition sequence makes it to where, hey, we're putting a backfire or a fire that goes against the wind on this same area every time. It might not have enough heat to kill those cedars along that line, but the stuff that's burning with the wind, you don't have cedars anymore. So you can see a profound difference on our areas where we burn and where we don't burn.
Right. Well, I know out here, I can vouch for where you're doing your prescribed burn. I can imagine what it's doing. You know, out here, like when Marcus is doing burns on Pack Saddle or Ellis or some of the Black Kettle stuff, you know, he started doing these when he first got here. And, man, you can see the difference in the habitat, the numbers, especially with quail. And, you know, Pack Saddle has a few grass burrs around, so I think it's starting to help with that. And so, so it's probably doing the same for what all WMAs is under your region?
There's like 18 or 19 of them. You know, I guess on the western edge would be like Caw WMA, you know, there by Ponca City.
Yep.
And then on we've got a little small one there south of Chickasha called Grady County. And then we've got on the western edge on the south end, we've got Cross Timbers WMA, which almost it's in Love County, but it's almost in Jefferson County there. It's right along the Red River. And all of those three, now Old Mogi here, we don't have any grazing on this. This is mostly post-oak blackjack timber that we're burning today. Now, there's some grassland openings, but, you know, we will do rotational burning and with our grazing, and it really makes some great quail habitat where we do that. So that's kind of the focus on some of those areas, like Cross Timbers WMA down in Love County, western Love County, where we will burn approximately a third of a burn unit each year. And then it kind of moves the cows. It's amazing, though. It's almost like you put a fence up. Those cows will stay on that third. And what it does for quail habitat, they'll graze that one third real heavy, and then you burn a third next year. The cattle move over to that new fresh burn, and what burned the year before will turn into a weed patch, which some people won't like that, but that's very productive for wildlife. And then by the time you get around to the third year, the cattle won't touch it at all, and it'll be back thick with mostly grass again, and that gives you enough fuel to carry your next hot fire through to kill your brush. So we just kind of do that rotation, and we're targeting quail a lot on those, it's very productive for deer and turkeys and everything, because you got a lot of different types of habitat right there together. And when I say different types, it's the same base habitat, you know, but there's a big difference because you've got some stuff right there close together that's burned maybe 6 months ago, and some of it burned a year and 6 months ago, and some of it burned 2 years and 6 months ago. So all that being together, it makes for some good habitat.
Yeah, I've heard good things about Cross Timbers, so good job down there. And I've heard some the numbers are coming back, and sounds great.
We do have some birds there. It's not like some of our western WMAs like Pack Saddle or Beaver or something like that. But for central Oklahoma, it's going to have as many as any place.
Jeff, if you'll hold on a second, I got to pay the bills. I got to take a Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association break here, and we'll be right back here in just a few minutes.
You bet.
He loves to talk about farming and ranching. Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
That life insurance that I have on myself, it's not for me. It's for my wife, that she doesn't have to sell the home. She doesn't have to go worry about how am I going to make this car payment? How am I going to come up with the cost out of pocket to pay this funeral? Because, you know, that's an expensive cost. And it's a cost that you're going to have. If you had a machine in your garage that made money, it was a money-making machine. You went out every day and you flipped the switch on that machine and it generated money to pay your bills. Would you insure that machine? I've never had anybody say no. Sure they would. Well, you are that machine. You flip your switch on every morning when you get up. You flip your switch on when you go to work. But yet we don't insure ourselves. It doesn't make any sense to me. Hi, I'm Mickey Lively. I'm an insurance agent with Oklahoma Farm Bureau. My office is located in Greer County. Call me anytime at 580-782-3827.
Life insurance and annuity products offered through Farm Bureau Life Insurance Company. Property and casualty products are offered through Oklahoma Farm Bureau Mutual Insurance and affiliated companies.
You don't want to let your cotton set in the field day after day waiting to be ginned. Now to better serve you, the cotton farmers in Oklahoma and the Texas Panhandle, Lone Star Gin has processed over 540,000 bales of cotton. They've got locations in Pampa, Texas, and now in Burns Flat, Oklahoma. Lone Star Gin has the ability to process over 2,400 bales per day. All they do is gin cotton. Go to LoneStarGin.com for more information, and you can find them on Facebook.
Life gets a lot easier when you've got the tools to handle the cold, like generators, because losing power is not an option. Propane heaters and portable heaters keep you warm and working. Heated jackets and vests keep your core warm. Gloves for your vehicle, anti-freezing wiper fluid, battery charger, engine starters, flashlights, rechargeable hand warmers, WeatherTech floor mats to protect your floorboard, D-Gel diesel, scrapers, and de-icer. You know who's got all this. Napa Auto Parts in Elk City, 716 West 3rd.
Every farmer and rancher knows nutrition is key when it comes to getting the best out of every animal. High Pro Feeds has built their reputation on providing the best nutrition possible. Their commitment to nutrition is unwavering. High Pro is a name you know and trust. Buy the best and get the results you deserve. Hobart Farm and Garden is your trusted High Pro Feeds dealer, providing quality feeds in bulk, bags, or sacks. Visit them online at HobartFarmandGarden.com.
This is Elk City Livestock Auction Market Report for Friday, December 12th. 1,580 head were sold, 10 head of steers at 455, brought 487.50, 5 at 552, brought 415, 9 at 603, brought 367.50, 14 at 670, brought 357.50, 18 at 713, brought 349, 7 at 759, brought 321.50, 6 head of heifers at 463, brought 427.50, 7 at 503, brought 402.50, 10 at 523, brought 400, 8 at 561, brought 372.50, 3 at 588, brought 335, 9 at 644, brought 350, 11 at 789, brought 335. Butcher cows were 64 to 180, butcher bulls 120 to 188.50, bred cows 1300 to 4350, pairs 2100 to 3750. Elk City Livestock Auction, 3202 South Highway 6, Elk City, Oklahoma. Sale every Friday at 9 a.m. to consign, call Brandon Hickey 580-497-609.
Oh, Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Let's see here. Texas Panhandle, Miami, 62 degrees. Humidity 16, dew point is 15. Winds are out of southwest at 16 with wind gust up 21. 8-inch soil temperature 46 degrees. Well, on the phone with me right now is Mr. Jeff Pennington. He is the regional supervisor for the central region of the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife and Conservation. Again, Jeff, thanks for joining me today. I know you guys are burning there, and how's the burn going?
It's going great. It's going great. You know, we've got a little higher humidities over here. That's a good thing about it. We're almost straight south of Tulsa, about 45 miles, and you know, we've got a little more humidity than you all have, and a little less wind, and a little less air temperature. So those are the three dynamics that you look at, the main three dynamics you look at when you're looking at burns. And these are areas, too, where we don't have a huge fuel accumulation buildup. We're burning off a couple of units that are on a two-year rotation, so they don't have a huge amount of fuel built up in them also.
Right. I always get a kick out of, you know, they always talk about the mountains of eastern Oklahoma, and it's funny, we're higher elevation out here than you guys are.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's kind of, I don't know, just, I never paid no attention to that when I was really growing up, but then when you get older, you just get curious, and then you look at the map, how we're building the elevations going up towards the Rocky Mountains out here, and I always call the Granite Mountains and the Wichita Mountains the Oklahoma Rockies, and everybody gets a kick out of that. It's pretty good stuff. So there's, but no, it's good. A quick update since we were talking about fires, and I need to update my listeners. There has been two counties added to the governors and the county ban burns in Oklahoma. Harmon was one of them. Cotton County, Grady, and McLean in basically western Oklahoma, and then in eastern Oklahoma, Choctaw and Haskell County. You guys are all under a countywide bird ban there. So just quick update on that. Well, back, you know, you were talking about you had two daughters, what, 28, 31? Is that what you said?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So did they grow up hunting? Did they love the outdoors?
You know, they fished a lot and they hunted a little. And, you know, my older one hunted some, and they've both gotten busy being young people in life. And they, you know, their spouses hunt, but they don't hunt much anymore. But they weren't, they can't say they weren't exposed to it.
Right. Yeah. I was just wondering about that. And, just curious, getting a little digging a little personal there, but I, you know, I just, I was listening to one of the fish biologists on the show up there in Oklahoma City one night on the sports animal. And, it sounds like, you know, his kids are real young, and he was going out and exposing them to fishing, and they like to fish for bass and bass tournaments and stuff like that. It was just fun to listen to.
Yeah, when they were young, I took them fishing frequently, but anyway, yeah, they've grown up on me.
Yeah, they grow up, don't they? Hey, speaking of fishing, since you're in charge of the central region, you got some pretty good fishing holes in your region.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of tremendous amount of lakes in central and eastern Oklahoma, you know, so an abundance, you know. Texoma's in the region, Caw, Keystone, all those bigger lakes there are in the central region. So, yeah, all the municipal lakes, and there's a ton of fishing opportunities here, no doubt about it.
Do you have a favorite?
You know, I fish on up. I've got some family that's on up in far northeast Oklahoma, up at Grand, and I like to, if you talk about what do I fish for the most anymore, it's crappie on Grand Lake. So, but there's certainly good fishing opportunities all across the state, but, you know, central and eastern Oklahoma have more water to begin with. You know, it rains more over here, so.
Yeah, that's a whole different world.
Yeah, better opportunity to be able to, but we have good fishing opportunities in western Oklahoma. I mean, it gets slim out there in the panhandle and everything, but there's good fishing opportunities at some of these lakes that we have in western Oklahoma as well. You know, I'm not as familiar with them and everything. I know where they are, I know my geography, been by them, and just haven't wet a line in any of them.
Right. Well, if it keeps raining up there in the panhandle like it has the last 2 years, I heard they might start having some bass tournaments on Lake Optimum.
Yeah, that'll be a big change, won't it? Yeah.
It's gone from a mud hole to it's actually got some water in the brush now. You never know. You might be on a kayak, but I don't know if they launch any boats on it. So, but there's a... Well, back to your... I'm saving some questions for the feral hog for later on, but back to the quail habitat and... just wildlife habitat that goes on with the prescribed burning. Have you got any land west of I-35 north?
Well, not on the north, the region, all of our region lands on the north side of, I-40 are all east of I-35.
Okay.
You know, now the only two WMAs even in the South Central that we have, there's that little Grady County one, which was a donation from a lady that gave that to the department upon her passing. It's only like 1,100 acres.
Yeah.
But Cross Timbers WMA is like 10,500 in Western Love County there. It's all, just like I said, almost to Jefferson County, right straight a little south of the community of Wilson. And it's got sandy soils on it, so it responds really well. Your sandy soils respond greatly to prescribed fire. You know, there's certain different reasons to do prescribed fire, but one of them is to produce wildlife foods, and there's a lot of wildlife foods, legumes in particular, that you know, whether it's your partridge pea or tick clovers or those types of things, that really you get a flush of that growth the year after you burn, and especially on sandy soils. And Cross Timbers has responded really well. It's a very productive place for deer, about as productive as we have in the department. And it is a place in central Oklahoma where there are some quail, you know. So that anymore, that's saying a lot. Now, if your listeners don't get over to central or eastern Oklahoma much, they're just pockets where there's significant numbers of quail left. So that's a big deal for us.
Well, why I was asking, I was thinking about, northern Oklahoma, especially along the Kansas line, and northwestern Oklahoma out in the Panhandle, especially, they have pheasant. And I remember when I lived in Kansas City that we'd always had down there along the Oklahoma, Kansas line to the south of Kansas City, and maybe over a little bit towards Call Lake, to hunt the prairie chickens. And and so I was just wondering how your prairie chicken and pheasant population are anywhere in your area.
I do prairie chicken surveys every year in northern Osage County, so that's going to be northwest of Tulsa there.
Yep.
And I'm northwest of Pahuska. Our prairie chickens is another one, I could have mentioned it along with quail, but not as many people are familiar with them. But these are greater prairie chickens over here.
Right.
Where you get on over there in y'all's country, you're going to have lesser prairie chickens. Now, the greater prairie chicken's doing a little better than the lesser prairie chicken, and they're difficult to distinguish between the two. If you had them side by side, the males, the little sacks on the side of their neck will be a different color. But I do prairie chicken counts in the heart of the best country that's left, and I still, on average, hear about 6 leks out of about a dozen or 13 stops. We'll stop, and the wind's got to be light, and we'll do this thing first thing in the morning. And it's really neat, if you like nature at all, to get out there and hear the booming grounds of those mating prairie chickens in the spring of the year.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's not much of anything better, but our chickens are, historically speaking, they would have been present across the state wherever there were grassland habitats, which were, because of the fires and everything, the grassland habitats were dominant, and prairie chickens were present, all across the state. But they've slowly retreated back over the decades into, there's not very many of them left. I think our last real estimate was somewhere in the neighborhood of 500-600, something like that, on the greater prairie chicken.
Right.
And it's mostly north central Osage County. There's still a few over in Craig and Nowata County over to the east of that. And, occasionally there'll be a bird here or there, especially in the wintertime, that comes a little further south. But, they're not doing well. They're holding their own in that area northwest of Pahuska, largely because the ranchers in there burn a lot. And, that hasn't turned to significant pockets of brush and trees in there. It's still big prairie country. And those chickens are holding on there and seem to be, while there's not as many there as there was 20, 30 years ago, they're declining at a slow rate in general there.
Right. And it just really isn't much we can do, is it? It needs to be all natural, doesn't it?
We've got to hope that those ranchers keep deciding on burning, and I don't think there's anything that's going to change. They run a lot of stalker cattle up there, and they'll burn that stuff off in the spring and bring those stalkers in for about 90 days, some of them more, some of them less. I don't know exactly how many days they're running, but, they like to run those stalkers on that fresh burn grass, and then 4th of July or a little after, they'll pull them out of there, and, then that stuff will just grow back, and big blue stem and Indian grass as far as you can see in places over there. It's really, really one of my favorite parts of the state.
Yeah, that's the southern edge of the Flint Hills, isn't it? Isn't that the start of the Flint Hills? Yes.
Yeah, here in that's the very southern extension of them, yes.
Yeah, because up in Kansas, it extends all the way across Kansas. And it just, I'd never been hunting for the greater prairies until I moved to Kansas. And a buddy of mine said, hey, wouldn't you go down here to my blah, blah, blahs, and let's go down there. But tell you what, you need to be in physical shape to be chasing those birds also.
Yeah. Well, I shot one in, I think it was 1988, I was going to school at the time at NEO, which is a junior college in Miami.
Yeah.
It's Miami, Oklahoma instead. I guess there's a Miami, Texas too. But
yeah, I found out the hard way a couple of years ago. I kept saying Miami, and then somebody jumped me out of cattleman's deal over there on the Texas side. Hey, it's Miami. That's okay.
Well, there used to be chickens there south of Miami, and you go east of Miami, Oklahoma, there, and it kind of turns into timber, but there's some big prairie country back there between there and Tulsa, really. Historically, that was all big prairie country, but there's too many tree rows and places that have grown up in trees, those chickens are gone out of there. But anyway, they're an animal that some animals like white-tailed deer can adapt to any kind of change.
Right.
As long as there's food out there, they're going to be fine, you know,
right.
and a little bit of cover. In some places they'll do better than others, but they're highly adaptable. Things like the prairie chicken need big, wide, open prairie country in order to survive, and there's just not as, you know, the land holding size gets, when it gets chopped up into smaller and smaller pieces, it's not conducive for them to thrive, you know, so it's more of a challenge for species like that.
Yeah, because how far do they, I'm asking you because you're the expert. When they get up, when they've been spooked or something, how far can they fly before they need to land?
Well, they're a gallinaceous bird, which is, means they're kind of related to a chicken, so their muscles are kind of like fast burst muscles, so they can fly fast and get up, and the prairie chickens can soar more than, say, a covey of quail would. Most time a covey of quail go down, you know, within 100, 150 yards.
Right.
But those prairie chickens can, they can go for a couple miles if they need to. Most of the time, they're going to go down within a mile, you know. But they kind of get up, and they'll kind of flap their wings three or four times, and then they'll kind of soar, and then they'll flap their wings and kind of soar for a ways. But, yeah, that's kind of how they roll there. But how we used to hunt them, we would get on a food source, you know, a crop field, Milo field, something like that. And that's the thing over around Miami, too. In addition to the trees, a lot of those old ag fields have been converted to fescue and Bermuda grass, you know, where
I noticed
there's not the farming in there that there used to be. So that combination of, but it's mainly the trees that did them in over there. But it's a neat bird, really neat bird.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I agree with you. We went to Table Rock Lake here a month, 6 weeks ago, and I noticed between Tulsa and Miami up there, I can't believe how many pecan trees are in that area. And, you know, but a lot of big timber in there now.
Yeah.
And but there's a deal. Jeff, you still got another minute? I need to take another break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk about feral hogs.
All right, sounds good.
All right, we're going to take Oklahoma Cattlemen's Association break. We'll be right back after this.
He loves talking about farming and ranching. Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Kent Watkins here with SEI Agritech in Elk City, Oklahoma. Winter is right around the corner. Don't wait to secure the best nutrition for your herd. Call now to book your winter contracts for cattle feed, including our premium Mixed 30 liquid feed. Give your cattle the edge this season and make sure they stay healthy during the cold winter months. Call us or stop by today here at SEI Agritech in Elk City for all of your feed needs. Follow us on Facebook for updates and more information.
Valley Center pivots are the most durable and reliable you can find. But when you do need replacement parts, your operation deserves the best. Valley Genuine Parts. Knutson Irrigation has been serving growers since 1981, and their experienced service technicians stand behind every part in their fully stocked warehouse. They also service other pivot brands. So when you need fast service and reliable parts, you need Knutson Irrigation. Call them for service or visit KnutsonIrrigation.com for more info.
They're expecting me to get whatever task done. To a farmer, a tractor, combine, gets him up and running. He's back in the field, makes some money. Guy in the oil field, their piece of equipment's running again. That makes some money. Solves that problem. I'm Brock Kalk, and my company is American Hose and Supply. We sell all types of industrial hose and fittings, oil field or agriculture. So if your farmer need a hose built, you can come in, we'll build it. You're oilfield customer and need us to come out and see you, we'll come out and see you and take an order or pick up a hose, build it, bring it back to you. If we're competitive on price, we say we'll bring it to you, we'll do whatever it takes to get it to you, make life easier on you, or you can call us to solve a problem. Hey, can you get this? Why wouldn't you? American Hose and Supply, 2111 South Main, Elk City, Oklahoma, in Camrock Building next to Fred's.
Or call 303-1123.
Why wouldn't you?
Hey folks, this is EJ Gredeman with ASCO Equipment out of Elk City, Oklahoma. If you need rental equipment, I got your back.
From excavators to wheel loaders, telehandlers, and forklifts, we rent the brands that you know and trust. With flexible terms, responsible service, and expert support, we're here to keep your job on track. Need equipment? We're on it here at ASCO Equipment. Visit ASCOEQ.com or stop by our Elk City branch, 513 West 20th here in Elk City, Oklahoma, or you can just give me a call, 580-243-9233. Appreciate it, folks, and y'all have a blessed day.
I've banked First National my whole life as an ag producer. We understand. I'm over here in Elk City. Monty's over at Sayre. We're both operators. We have a real-life experience on the situation. If times are tough, it's not just for our customers. We feel it too. When it's dry, when rates are up, we're able to communicate with management and everybody, hey, this is the situation. Our customers feel comfortable knowing that we get what they're talking about. I'm Jason Redd, and I help make the difference at First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Sayre.
Member FDIC.
Yeah, farmers can be pretty tough because it's a hard world in farming, you know, in the farming market. It's tough, so they're going to do all they can to get the best deal they can, and we're going to give it to them. Everything for maintenance on your equipment, changing your oils, you need some antifreeze, you need some hydraulic oil, any kind of grease. We got the bolts and fasteners now. We're opening up electrical fittings, zip ties, penetrating oils. Camrock is the name of the company. It's 2111 South Main, Elk City, south of Fred's Steakhouse.
He loves to talk about farming and ranching. Here's more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm running a little behind schedule, but that's okay. Medford, here is your northwestern Oklahoma's ag weather update. 57, humidity's 33, dew point's 28. The winds are out of the southwest at 11 with wind gusts randomly up to 15 to 17 miles an hour. 42 is the bare soil temperature. 534 is the sunset. 62 today, sunny today. 32 and clear tonight and tomorrow. Another beautiful day. 66 and mostly sunny. All right. Welcome back to Jimmy's Wildlife Wisdom Hour. I got Mr. Jeff Pennington, who is the regional supervisor for the central region of the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife and Conservation. Again, thank you for coming on today, Jeff.
You bet.
And hey, let's talk about my unfavored subject, feral hogs.
Okay.
I heard through the grapevine you're the feral hog expert at the Wildlife Department. Give us a little history on the feral hogs.
Feral hogs, you know, came into the country first from the Spanish explorers. You know, they'd drop off some hogs on islands or wherever they were first, you know, coming to the New World, and they would let them out as an easy food source. You know, they'd let some go and be able to gather them up later, you know, because they were resilient and, you know, they do what hogs do. But specifically for Oklahoma, you know, there would have been folks that still kind of did that, where they kind of had hogs in far southeast Oklahoma, and they just kind of let them roam the mountains and eat acorns and grubs and whatever they could find, and then they'd, you know, find some of them and butcher them in the fall and winter once it got cool enough where they could store the meat good, you know. But hunting hogs became very popular in the 1990s, and a lot of people that wanted to hunt hogs illegally went down there and got some of those feral hogs and moved them through different parts of the state. Like I said, that was all 100% illegal because the Department of Ag has rules and regulations that prohibit that, but that didn't stop them from moving them.
Right.
And pretty much we have hogs today in all of the counties. I believe Grant County and our three panhandle counties are the only counties that don't have any. And some counties are just eaten up with them. Now, out in western Oklahoma, areas that have the suitable woody cover for them, that's going to be the areas that they're still able to thrive, especially if there's a riparian area, a river or something goes through there. There's going to be a bunch of them in general coming up off of that. But some of that your country out there is open enough, especially if you can get the wildlife services guys out there with a helicopter, they can smack them real good because they can't effectively hide out there. So that's in the 1990s and the first 10 years of the 2000s, they were moved across the state illegally by people, and they compete with wildlife for food resources. They will eat a lot of different types of wildlife. and they are a disease vector for both wildlife and, you know, your livestock here. So they're no good for anybody, and certainly if I could snap my fingers and wouldn't have one of them left in the state, that's what we would do. But they're extremely resilient animal, and they've in the eastern two-thirds of the state and in those riparian areas on further west than that, they're thriving. And so anyway, that's kind of the history of them. Last 20 years, people have just had to learn how to deal with them and control them the best they can.
Right, yeah, because as a farmer, I've seen the damage they can do. I've felt it in my pocketbooks before. And don't get me wrong, I know, guy, I'm an outdoorsman, and I know people love to hunt them and stuff, and that's fine. And I'm not here to pick on you. I'm here on the ag side. And my son and I, from, I'd say, probably 21, no, 20 to 23, probably lost $20,000-$30,000 because of feral hogs. And WMAs have a little different set of rules on the feral hogs versus private land, don't they?
Yes, they do. And before we leave that, I want to say that, you know, like on the wildlife and the ag are largely on the same. We're right on lockstep in, you know, we feel the same way. I wish we didn't have any of them. Now, you have some of your hunters, and I shoot them sometimes. If I'm out deer hunting and I see some come by, and I know there's not going to be trapping around, I'll shoot them. I'll target those adult sows, and I'll try to get as many out of that sounder as I can. But so anyway, I wish, like, we didn't have any, because they're certainly not good for our wildlife. They're a known destroyer of turkey nests, quail nests, anything that's on the ground that can't get away from them, they'll consume it.
Right.
We hate them. So now on our wildlife management areas, yes, you have to have a hunting license to hunt hogs on a wildlife management area. We're on private property. You don't have to have that. There's other things that you can't do. On private property, you can, if you get the Department of Agriculture regulates the movement of feral hogs, because you can sell them to high fence areas that sell these hunts to people and stuff, but you've got to get a permit from the Department of Ag. That's not something that the Wildlife Department handles, but on a wildlife management area, you can't do that. All hogs, no hogs can come off of a WMA alive. So you can, in general, in deer and turkey season, the only way you can kill a pig is if you're out there deer hunting or turkey hunting. You can't come out there specifically to hunt pigs on your public lands, but people that are deer hunting or turkey hunting, they can certainly smack them. And that's the bulk of the differences. You know, there's very almost no restrictions on private land other than during deer and during a big game season. So if it's an elk season or antelope season, that's very limited, and we don't really have hogs where we have antelope. But during those deer seasons, you've got to have either a filled or an unfilled deer tag if you're out there pursuing pigs. And that's there's some exceptions to that if you're the landowner or something. And those seasons are pretty limited in nature when it comes to around the year's, you know, time frame and everything. But that's kind of the gist of it. All of our wildlife management areas in central Oklahoma have feral hogs except for one. And it's had them before, but they've just been killed off. And that's the old prairie chicken area, John Dahl, which is just northwest of Huska. All our other ones have differing populations of them, and we control them. And our friends at Wildlife Services come in there with a helicopter, especially if a neighboring landowner is having a problem with them. They'll come in with their chopper and try to help us out, smack a bunch of them. But we still have them, and they're resilient. They'll take up to depending on which ones you kill, you can kill up to 70% of them just to have the same number next year.
Right. Because oh, yeah.
They've got such a high reproductive potential. So, anyway.
So, Jeff, I got one last break to take, and I need to take it. And when we come back, my old text line has lit up. The Fowler Agency text line's ate up, and there's some really good questions on here that I'd like to ask you.
All right, sounds good.
All right, we're going to take a Oklahoma Cattlemen Association break, and we'll be right back after this.
Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Presenting Again Fling's Love Story. Dear love of my life, we were on the 12B bus this morning when I caught a whiff. A scent so fresh, so life-changing, I had to find its source. Alas, I didn't know if you were the woman in the pink freshly washed cardigan or the retired mailman next to me, but I knew one of you was my soulmate. Ah, the scent of Gain Flings. Try Gain Flings with OxyBoost and Febreze.
A generator is something that is out of sight and out of mind until you actually need it. Do you own a generator? Is it serviced and ready to provide backup power when you need it? A well-maintained generator gives you peace of mind during a power outage. Whether it's home or commercial, all generators need to be serviced regularly. Culver Electric provides reliable generator service all over Western Oklahoma. Call today and discuss a service plan to fit your needs at 580-243-5846. See us on Facebook or go to culverelectric.net.
When your tractor has a flat, you're stuck. When your truck's on a construction site and a tire goes down, you're in trouble. You need help. So you call down to Blair. And they come to you. They answer the phone, and somebody comes to wherever you are to fix your problem. They carry Firestone, Michelin, and some other tires. Blair Tire and Feed, Highway 283 and 19. On-site tire service, 563-2692. 563-2692. They come to you.
It helps to work with someone who's been down the same road you're traveling. Someone who knows what you're up against and what you're going through. When it comes to farmers and ranchers, that's us. That's who we are. Our lenders know ag inside and out because we're producers too. We approach it like a partnership. We want to put ag producers in position to be successful. We're very laid back and easy to deal with. And people seem to like that. We think you'll like it too. I'm Marty Maddox. Great Plains Bank in Elk City is here to lend farmers and ranchers a helping hand. Member FDIC.
One of the computers here at the station was crashing, about to lose everything on it. And we didn't even know it. But Dennis knew because he was watching and he warned us in time.
Hey Gabe, it's Dennis. Our system detected that one of your computers has a hard drive that's about to fail.
Which one?
It's Nathan's.
So what do I need to do?
Well, we probably need to get it in the shop and get the drive cloned to a new machine before he loses any data off of it.
Do you have another computer in stock that we can just get it fixed real quick?
Sure, we've got some in stock. Just need to get it in, get it cloned over, and be good to go.
Okay, thanks a lot, Dennis.
You bet. Sounds good. See ya.
ITL monitors our computers at Paragon Communications remotely, so Dennis Teal knows there's a problem before we even know it. He helped us save years worth of valuable files. ITL's remote monitoring comes in very handy here at work. That kind of security system for your computers can keep your business running so you can keep making a living. As a farmer or rancher, you're always looking for ways to save time and money. The Apache Hay Wagon from Everett's Welding in Visalia, Oklahoma will help you do just that. The Apache Hay Wagon eliminates 80 to 90% of hay waste with its unique design. It hauls multiple bales, saving you time and money. Go by Everett's Welding today and ask to see the Apache Hay Wagon. You'll be glad you did. You can also visit them online at everettswelding.com.
Now, back to more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Walters, Oklahoma. Here is your Hobart Farm and Garden Ag weather update for southwestern Oklahoma. 57, dew points 26, humidity's 31, 47 one-hundredths of an inch of rain in the last 10 days. Three-day average 4-inch ag bare soil temperature 46 degrees, 543 sunset, 64 today, 32 tonight, and 66 manana. All right, on the phone with me right now is Mr. Jeff Pennington, Regional Supervisor for the Central Region of the Oklahoma Department of Wildlife Conservation. Again, for the 100th time, sir, thanks for spending your time with me for our noon hour on coming on the show.
Hey, I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, no problem. Well, before I get to this first question, because I think this what I'm getting ready to tell you probably is going to answer it, 2014, I don't remember what month, in Outdoor Life magazine, there was an article in there about the down in Georgia. They gave this wildlife biologist 20,000 acres at Fort Benning. And they said, you got 5 years to get rid of the pigs feral hogs. And this article, I guess it started back in the late 1990s when this wildlife biologist come on there and did this. What he found out, he broke it up into 4,000 or 5,000 acre plots. And what he found out in that 5 years, that if you get rid of the sows, you get rid of 95% of your problems. And it's kind of like, I guess, a lion's den of lions. You know, the lion, the male lion is there to protect the herd and to, you know, breed. But the lioness, the female lions, you know, they're the backbone of that group of lions and baby, you know, cubs and stuff like that. So it was pretty cool to read that. He said, you know, because, you know, a lot of people hunting hogs on private land, they want to go out there and kill that big boar with them big tusks and stuff. But really, to help us with our problem, you need to get rid of them sows.
Yep, and the effective control mechanisms, this has been proven everywhere. You can hunt them and you can shoot them, and if there's absolutely none of these other two control mechanisms I'm talking about, and hunting is the only thing you have, you want to try to target those sows. And, you know, for the biology of those pigs, when you see a big group of pigs, most of the time that's adult sows and their offspring from the past year.
Right.
You know, and that might be a group of 10 pigs, that might be a group of 40 pigs. But, you know, those larger ones in that group are almost always exclusively sows, and then that's going to be their young. Those boars, you can kind of shoot them independently. Most of the time, they're not with those family groups. They're just kind of roaming around on their own. So a lot of times when you see a single pig, it will be one of those boars. But back on effective control, I want to be sure and get this across to people. Effective control is trapping and aerial gunning. That's the two ways of effectively controlling pigs. And they've shown that if you try to target your trapping with where you try to catch that whole sounder at a time, you take that sounder off of the landscape, then you move on and try to find the next sounder, and you take that sounder or that group of pigs out, and you try to erase them one sounder at a time. These little small traps that will just catch a few, you know, one or two or three pigs, a lot of times what you do is you just educate those sows. You know, there's a method of trapping in a manner to try to catch the whole group, and they've got these smart traps, you know, that you can use that they cost a lot of money, but they're very effective because they'll text you pictures and let you know that, hey, the whole sounder's in there, and then you can drop the door on them and catch them all. But there's ways of going about it without that smart trap, just using cattle panels and T-posts and, you know, wire those things up, and, you know, you can make a homemade little drop door with a rope and a trip stick, and the key is not to try to set it at first. Let those hogs, let them get used to going inside that corral trap for a few days, and then set up your trip stick over here, not by where the main corn is, but give them time to get in there, because those sows, those young pigs will come running in there like crazy. They're young, stupid, and hungry, and those adult sows, sometimes they won't ever even go in there.
Right.
Especially if they've been exposed to trapping before. But you can remove a whole sounder at a time and then move over to the next one. Rod Pinkston, he's got some websites on YouTube there. He runs that Jaeger Pro trapping system. He explains that really well on some of his YouTube videos if people want to watch that. But that whole sounder trapping is the way to try to effectively control them on your landscape, except the only thing better out there in western Oklahoma is going to be aerial gunning. If you can get with your wildlife services people that's under the Department of Ag, they will respond to, sometimes they get overwhelmed, you know, and they might not be able to get to you quick, but reach out to them, let them know that you have a problem. Those guys are the experts, and they really know how to kill them, and they'll do some trapping and stuff like that, but out there where they've got that helicopter in that more open country, they can really put a hurt on them.
Yeah, I've heard talking to some of those trappers that fly in that helicopter, and how many they can get in one day. And I know they're burning up some shotguns, some ammo, and some shoulders got some bruising going on.
Yeah, definitely have some sore shoulders. But, you know, if I was to be able to do that, I've told some of them before, you know, like, days like that, you're like, man, I get paid to do this, you know. So, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Well, that answered, what you just said answers half of this question. One of the listeners, he said, what's the best bait where deer won't get into traps? And are electronic gates worth it? For the most part, I had a buddy that's got one of those WW circle traps that, you know, turn as they drop on these hogs. And, you know,
boar busters, what those are.
Yeah. And he learned that the deer love corn too, because corn's really good to bait hogs with. What he did, he would soak that corn or pour it on top, use motor oil or diesel or something, and then put some Kool-Aid on top of that that bait pile. And the deer and the coons don't like that smell or oil, but the hogs love it. Hogs love anything that's edible.
Yeah, they're not very picky, you know. So they'll come in to most anything on the bait. There, most people use shell corn, and you can sour it, and on those deals, like with the trip stick on inside your trap, you know, because they can eat it, they can consume it rapidly.
Yep.
You know, one trick to try to get it to where that you give time for all of those hogs to come in the trap. If you don't have a smart trap, you've got the old conventional style trap, is to get your post hole diggers out and dig a post hole and dig some of that, put some of that corn down there, you know, foot and a half deep. They can smell that corn, and they will root it out and take the time it takes to root it out, and that gets before they hit that trip stick, and that gives it time for all those other people to get in there.
Yeah. Jeff, I'm out of time. Thank you so much. Have a great day. Get back to your fire.
Day in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 94.
All right. See you later. Thank you.
Hello. Here's a station you might like.
This is KECO Elk City.
I'm Therese Crowley. New calls to defund ICE after the Minneapolis death of protester Renee Good. As Congress works